Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizohan Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of eons. We now can see this, listen to this, accept and hold this. May we completely understand and actualize this Tathagata's true meaning. Well, again, welcome everyone. Are we up and running on Zoom there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tonight's teaching is called Building a Sanctuary to Weather the Storm. We start out with a koan. One day, when the Buddha was walking with his disciples, he pointed to the ground and said, "It would be good to build a sanctuary here." At which point, a senior disciple picked a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and announcing, "The sanctuary is built." And this is case number 4 from the Book of Serenity Koan collection. Throughout our lives, we experience a wide range of emotions, moods, mind states, and many different physical sensations. Some experiences are pleasant and enjoyable. Some are confusing and painful. When considering our life experiences, it can be challenging to stay balanced, to be hopeful. We can easily become lost, overwhelmed, and sometimes depressed. Still, even within life's storms, there are ways to build a sanctuary within, to meet life's turbulence with more steadiness and compassion. In Zen, we have the tools to build a sanctuary. They include the 3 treasures, the 4 noble truths, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Also, creating a sanctuary requires being grounded in mindfulness and consistent meditation. I like using the word sanctuary because it brings into play all the aspects of our practice. This includes not only the 3 treasures, the 4 noble truths, and the Noble Eightfold Path, but the physical space as well. Webster's Dictionary defines sanctuary as a safe place, a place for protection. And this includes not only the sacred space within, but our zendo, your home meditation space, and even Zoom. I like what Zenju Earthen Manuel says about sanctuary, and she's an author, poet, and Zen priest. And this is from a short teaching she gave called A Glimpse of the Unseen. Ultimately, sanctuary is within. We walk spiritual paths by gathering ways of living that are in alignment with peace. Our outer sanctuaries, like a zendo, help us in doing so. When we are in a spiritual community, perfect or not, we see ourselves more clearly. We see the depth of our pain and rage while bowing or offering incense and flowers. We move so slowly that what is in our bodies cannot be overlooked. Over time, you begin to see another side of yourself. Another side of life. This side of life goes unseen in the rush of daily living. Creating sanctuary within requires a practice of stillness and silence, provided in outer sanctuaries. When we get a glimpse of the unseen, we are brought back from where we emerged, be it the earth or the source of all life. Lately, it seems as if a day does not go by without hearing some type of bad news from people that I know directly or are within my circle of acquaintances. These include members of the Jizoan Zen community that have reached out to me directly, and from your sharing at our events, both in person and online. I hear of marriages that are falling apart, or have fallen apart, some for the second time. Children or grandchildren that are having serious health problems. People struggling mentally and physically caring for parents that have all kinds of age-related issues, including dementia and Alzheimer's. Dysfunctional work environments. A cousin that has endless challenges with his three highly autistic daughters. And the ever-present concern of being able to pay the bills. And when you add to the trauma and uncertainty that we experience in our lives, the endless hours of being bombarded by news feeds, the craziness of social media, the unrelenting pace of modern life, extreme political animosity dividing a nation, our ongoing global atrocities and wars, corporate downsizing, the rising cost of living, we can be left overwhelmed in a state of negative overload. There's a koan that addresses how to proceed during these challenging times. It's called Going Straight Along a Road with 99 Curves. Towards the end of his life, the Japanese Zen master Genchu Watanabe called a young disciple to his bedside and posed a question. How can one go straight on a steep mountain road of 99 curves? The disciple was baffled. So Watanabe Roshi answered the question himself. Walk straight by winding along. Walk straight by winding along. Faced with the 99 curves, we might prefer to take a shortcut. The shortest distance, as we know, between two points is a straight line. Walking straight might imply avoiding the 99 curves altogether. By contrast, to wind along a winding road is to align oneself with the realities of life one is actually encountering. Embodying the straightforward mind of the committed practitioner, one makes true progress, impeded and delayed perhaps by stops, turns, detours, and other apparent setbacks. To progress in this way requires patience and perseverance. It also requires the ability to see clearly and the courage to resist when necessary the urge to take the shortcut. Karen Mazin Miller, author of Paradise in Plain Sight, Lessons from a Zen Garden, describes a period in her life where she encountered the curves on the road and how she found sanctuary within her practice. And this is what she says. It was September 23rd, 1993, when I knocked on Taizen Maizumi Roshi's door, afraid to say how afraid I was. Maizumi Roshi was the priest of a small temple in Los Angeles. I am lost, I said in so many words, as if anyone got there any other way. At this fragile point in my life, I was between addresses, between careers, between marriages, between youth and the brittle aftermath of youth, beyond shame, without better judgment, and with nowhere else to go. He invited me to sit down, the very thing I feared most of all, It hardly makes sense that sitting still and quiet in a meditation hall or at home teaches you to stand up and put one foot in front of the other. But that's exactly what Zen practice does. It is possible to traverse a great distance while your mind stands absolutely still, to alter your life entirely while doing next to nothing. "Your life is your practice," he said to me, and it was true. My life had never moved farther or faster than it did after he taught me to sit down and let my life happen. We all stand on a spot like this, every moment of our lives, facing the only universe we will ever know. And most of the time, we turn back towards familiar haunts, the scary stories inside our heads. That's how we turn the gates of heaven into our own eternal damnation. I didn't learn everything from my Izumi Roshi, but he taught me how to build a sanctuary within this life. All of us search for meaning in our lives. For example, some people look for it in accumulating wealth. Others look for it in their careers. Others in going on vacations routinely. And for some, by holding political office. We are all searching in various ways. However, not one of these can provide us with permanent satisfaction or happiness. We are constantly bombarded with an array of choices in our modern world, some frivolous, some very serious, all of which can lead to confusion about what to do with our lives. Building a sanctuary is about putting a meaningful direction into our lives, to work on ourselves to realize our full potential, and to be a benefit to others. It's not about changing anything externally. It's about changing our state of mind to find contentment and to weather the storms. This means deepening our understanding of what gives life purpose and what will bring us happiness now and in the future. The starting point is taking refuge in the three treasures, the Noble Eightfold Path, and building a solid home meditation practice. Sometimes, however, the starting point occurs only after we hit a low point in our lives. And here's one such example, and this is from a Tricycle magazine interview with a composer and musician. "I grew up in Western Los Angeles. I was really passionate about music. But I struggled with depression. Both my parents struggled with depression, and so did my brother. And for most of the part, they did pretty well handling it. Eventually, both my parents and my brother tried different prescription medications, and it helped them a little bit, but I felt it kept them in a limiting bubble. When I went to college, my depression got really big, and I was so overwhelmed by life. I just felt like it didn't have a functioning path that would help me manifest goals. So I almost gave up on life. I was thinking about killing myself, and I actually had a plan to do it. I found a Buddhist practice and started practicing daily. And pretty soon, my depression went away. I've not been suicidal since, and I've not had depression ever take hold of me since. I'm not on medication. I'm just one lucky guy." Then the interviewer asks, "Please explain what your daily practice looks like." And he responds, "It's a practice of chanting, meditation, studying, and going to discussion meetings. I chant twice a day. I especially like chanting three times a day. The morning chant is usually as early as possible, once I wake up. but there's no specific time. Usually, for me, it's about 20 minutes long. I have prayer beads that I hold in my hands, and they represent infinity. Chanting is a form of prayer. Chanting the Lotus Sutra is a way of renewing my vows with myself and the cosmos. For me, it's about learning to see the essential true nature of life, learning to see beyond the illusion, and to take responsibility. I learned how to take more responsibility for feelings and my thoughts, and how to take action. To me, it's just an unending list of beautiful practices. The practice of going for refuge is as ancient as Buddhism itself. It began with those who, after meeting the newly awakened Buddha, were so moved, they declared their dedication to him and his teachings, the Dharma. The way they declared this dedication was by stating they were going for refuge in the Buddha and in the Dharma. In time, some of the Buddha's disciples also experienced awakening, and they became the Sangha. Together, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha became known as the Triple Refuge. But today, the Triple Refuge is also known, or also called, the Three Jewels and the Three Treasures. The tradition of creating a sacred space where you can find refuge is so pervasive throughout history that some social scientists call it a primordial concept, something we feel almost biologically. Historically, people could find such places in buildings or in rooms. And I'm always fascinated by the interfaith chapels in hospitals. They're there in most of them. Modern rooms carrying on a tradition that has existed since the beginning of civilization. Whether we feel especially vulnerable, such spaces provide a sanctuary. There are two kinds of sanctuaries we can use to recover our balance and serenity, virtual and spiritual. We can turn these spaces into sanctuaries if we enter them consciously, grounded in the Three Treasures and the Noble Eightfold Path. As we all know, since the pandemic, Zoom has become an important tool to stay connected. And I think that most of us had never heard the word Zoom until the pandemic. As far as I know, there was only one Zen community up until then that had an online presence, and that is the Tree Leaf Zendo that started in 2006 as an entirely online sangha. Today we have a vibrant Zoom community that serves as a sanctuary for those that can't attend our programs in person routinely or at all. I think the focus of the Tree Leaf Zendo is most appropriate for today's world and reflects our vision of a Zoom community as well. And this is from the Tree Leaf Zendo's website. We are an all-digital practice place for Zen practitioners who cannot easily commute to a Zen center due to health concerns, living in remote areas, or childcare, work, and family needs, and seek to provide Zazen sittings, retreat discussions, interaction with a teacher, and all other activities of a Soto Zen Buddhist Sangha. The Jizoan Zen community is not an all-digital practice place like the Tree Leaf Zendo, but Zoom has become an integral part of our community and other Zen monasteries and Zen centers as well. The most accessible sanctuary we have is spiritual presence, the ability to focus all our attention on whatever is happening right here, right now, not out there in the world of bad news, not in the future where things may go terribly wrong, but this moment, calming the mind in silence and grounding in rituals such as lighting candles, offering incense, and chanting, add depth to the sanctuary within. These activities speak to the deeper reaches of our being. We can all recover a bit of peace and confidence and hope whenever we need it. The door inside us, the state of mind that leads to peace, is real. It opens an infinite sacred space in our own hearts and minds. If we go there and seek sanctuary, we can find it. The one thing we know as a fact is that everything changes. The Heart Sutra makes this clear. And tonight, when we close with the evening gatha, you will hear me say, everything is of the nature of impermanence. Intellectually, we know this. But as we grow older, the fact is harder to shrug off. It becomes obvious. More doctor visits, more blood tests, the need for stress tests, MRIs, CAT scans, hearing aids, cataract surgery, knee surgery, and the list goes on. Aging is not just change, it's irreversible change. Irreversible change is very different than ordinary change because there's no turning back. So this is what Lewis Richmond says with regards to aging in his book, Aging as a Spiritual Practice. Richmond is a Zen priest and studied under Shunryu Suzuki. And this is what he says. I had come to a small Buddhist temple on a busy San Francisco street to hear a lecture by Shunryu Suzuki. At the time, Suzuki was in his 60s, and most of the people in the room were in their 20s and 30s. During the question and answer period, someone asked, "Why do we meditate?" Suzuki Roshi, with a laugh, said, "So you can enjoy your old age." We laughed with him. We thought he was joking. Now I realize that he was being honest. He had been ill the whole previous winter and was still coughing and wheezing months later. Physically, he hadn't been feeling well, and yet his whole demeanor radiated contentment. He was clearly enjoying his old age. There comes a point as we age that we have a significant event that changes our perspective on life. It could be a heart attack, a cancer diagnosis, stroke, complications with diabetes, going blind, or some combination of these. Richmond describes this as when lightning strikes. It is the moment we truly wake up to our aging and see the full significance of it in our whole life. Until that moment, regardless of our age, we spend much of our time not thinking too much about where our life is headed or what it all means. But once lightning strikes, it's different. We have reached a tipping point. We have stopped seeing things as we wish they were and can't see them as they actually are. I suspect that some of you had one of those moments when lightning struck. For me, lightning struck with a diagnosis of a cyst on the brain. It came shortly after someone I knew very deeply died of a brain tumor. That diagnosis was frightening, and at the same time became a clarifying event for me. After that diagnosis, distinctions became crystal clear. What brought meaning and purpose what did not? What mattered, what did not? Where my allegiance belonged and where it did not? Where I got fulfillment and where I did not? That diagnosis was a wake-up call, which resulted in me deepening my practice and strengthening the sanctuary within for inevitable future storms. So in summary, throughout our lives, we experience a wide range of emotions, moods, and many different physical sensations. Some experiences are pleasant and enjoyable. Some are confusing, painful, and terrifying. Within life's storms, there are ways to build a sanctuary within to meet life's turbulence with more steadiness and compassion. Building a sanctuary is about putting a meaningful direction into our lives and calming the mind in silence. Also, creating a sanctuary requires being grounded in mindfulness and a consistent home practice. We can all recover a bit of peace, confidence, and hope whenever we need it.